My name is Nancy Roberts, and this call, the topic is Never Fight About Money Again. And I'm really excited about today's call because I have a guest speaker joining me. He's going to join us about halfway through the call because there was some information I wanted to give to you beforehand and then let Craig come in towards the second half of the call. Craig Houck is an AXA financial advisor. And so he's going to be sharing with us some of his wisdom and his experience of counseling with couples throughout the years. So back to today's topic, never fight about money again. The couple of things that we're going to delve into on this call are the biggest mistake that couples make when discussing money, the real source of money conflict, where it comes from, and your DISC money type. Yes, DISC can be related to just about anything, and I think I'm doing a good job of finding different ways to explain DISC and show people how powerful of a tool it really is. But it absolutely contributes to how we spend money, how we save money, how we view money, depending on our DISC style. And hopefully you'll be able to recognize your style as well as your partner's, and then how to find some common ground, or at least give you different things to talk about. So let's start the content of the call, and again, Craig will come in about halfway through. So when I sent out the form for the call, if you have that in front of you, it's a great way to take notes. If you don't have it in front of you, that's fine. Just get a piece of paper and a pen. I'll let you know what it is, what topic we're talking about, so you can kind of keep it organized. But the number one thing we wanted to talk about was the biggest mistake that couples make when discussing money. And in my experience, at least observing couples, and I'm the youngest of six children, and all my siblings have been married, so I've had a lot to observe over the years, is what I see is that people don't discuss it. That's the biggest problem. I find that when couples first get together, it's not a topic of conversation for the most part. It seems to be one of those topics that for a long time was very taboo. Especially if you grew up in a family that didn't discuss money, then that was kind of like the example that had been set. So it's not something that couples really talk about, you know, how I relate to money, how you relate to money, how we see it differently. And so then they get into this relationship, and lo and behold, money becomes one of the biggest, if not the biggest, source of conflict for most people. They say the number one reason people divorce is because of money and money issues that they had. So I think it's probably something that should be talked about, obviously very early on if it's a new relationship, but even if it's an established relationship, you have to find a way to bring up this topic. I found the results of a kind of a humorous survey that said that several hundred couples were surveyed, and they basically were asked what tactics they used to avoid discussions about holiday spending. And so here were the top six tactics that people used, which I thought was funny. Number one, they changed the subject. 24% of people said they do that. They changed the subject. 23% of people said that they hide price tags or purchases. Number three, 17% said they hide recent purchases, which I think that means they put them away in a closet or the trunk of the car and then bring them out a month or two later and act like they've had them for a long time. I myself have been guilty of that. I think I saw my mother do that as well. Number four, 10% of the people said that they just walk away from the discussion when it gets heated. Number five, 9% said that they say, it's my money. You know, I'm going to do with it what I want. And then number six, 8% of the people say that they bring up the other person's faults. So instead of discussing the issue of money and overspending, they just kind of attack the other person. So obviously from this survey, we see that there's not a lot of healthy habits necessarily that have formed or that we have around discussing money. And especially during the holidays, it gets really tricky. That was part of my desire to do this call this time this year. One, because I know the holidays, it gets tough. People have different ideas about how much to spend, who to spend money on, how much do we buy for the kids, that type of thing. Plus, with the way the economy's been so up and down, I knew that this was a topic that was on a lot of people's minds, so it was a good time to address it. So again, the biggest mistake couples make when discussing money, most of them don't discuss it, and then when they do discuss it, they discuss it badly. And we're actually going to look into why that is in the next section. so the second piece we're going to talk about is what is the real source of money conflict. So why is it that when couples go to discuss it, there's so many challenges? It's because if you have that form in front of you, there's two symbols. There's a money symbol, and then there's a plus sign, and then maybe a little diagram you couldn't read or you didn't know what it was. What that is a money blueprint. Okay? So what we're looking here is the real source of conflict between people is that they have different money blueprints. Well, what's a money blueprint? Well, a blueprint, just like a blueprint for a house, is a map or a design, so you know how that house is going to be structured, and if you have the blueprint, you understand that house. Well, we all have a blueprint from childhood about money. We all got messages about money when we were children, whether we observed things, whether we heard things, whether we saw things happen, whether we experienced them, and it shapes how we think and act in relationship to money. And if you think about it, everybody had a different upbringing. So everyone, not only, you know, we know it shapes our personalities, that's kind of a given, but have we ever stopped to think that that also shapes how we relate to and respond to money? And I'm going to give you a couple examples of money blueprints so you can kind of understand what that means. So, for example, someone like Donald Trump, he has a money blueprint that is basically set to being a billionaire. That's what his blueprint is from his childhood. And so even when he's a millionaire, he doesn't feel successful. That's not enough money for him because his blueprint says, I should be a billionaire. And the proof of that is that he can lose all his money, which he has done several times, and within a very short order, he has all of his money back. People are pretty amazed at that. Well, not everybody has the blueprint to be a billionaire. Some people have it in their head that they're worth $100,000, and so their career choices, their business choices, et cetera, they always tend to stay in that area. Maybe small increments, they, you know, get a small pay increases or whatever it is, but they're around that $100,000 mark. That's their blueprint. Some people have the blueprint of being in debt. Of not making more than $30,000. So whatever your blueprint is from your childhood, whatever got formed from when you were very young, that's kind of how you live. And those are the kind of the conditions that are going to exist or you're going to create in order to maintain that blueprint. Lottery winners are a great example. So many stories we hear about people that win millions of dollars and within a few years, they're back to where they started or worse off. Okay, so and when you hear that, you can't believe it. Like these rock stars and sports stars that you hear about, they had billions of dollars, and then they've lost everything, and they're back to, you know, poverty status or whatever it was. And we ask how that can happen because we don't think it would happen to us. But the point is that whatever their blueprint is, if they weren't good at managing their money when they had very little money, just having a lot of money isn't going to make them good money managers. So if we right now make a salary of $50,000, but we're in debt, we're having trouble paying our bills, someone giving us $500,000 while we think that would be a great solution isn't going to change the fact that we don't know how to manage money and that money probably wouldn't last us very long. So those are some examples of what a money blueprint is. And everyone has different blueprints. And so, you know, if you're in a partnership, let's say, and you have one money blueprint that's set to something that says, you know, go big or stay home. So spend a lot, that's how you make a lot. My father had that blueprint. You know, he believed that you had to spend money to make money. If that doesn't match up with your partner's blueprint, if their blueprint is, no, you have to play it safe, which was my mother, by the way, then you've got conflicting blueprints. Now all of a sudden they don't match up, and that's where a lot of discord's going to come from. So what's your money blueprint? That's the question you want to be asking through this part of the call. Your money blueprint comes from three different places, and there's little symbols here for you to write them down. The first one is a picture of an ear, and that's verbal programming. So your blueprint comes from verbal programming, the things that you heard when you were growing up around money. Now, maybe you were fortunate and you had positive money messages when you were growing up. Maybe your parents handled money well. Maybe they didn't fight about money, and that's great. But the vast majority of people that I speak to didn't get great messages when they were being raised around money. A lot of people heard things like money doesn't grow on trees. Rich people are greedy and dishonest. You have to work hard for money. Money's the root of all evil. And I had a very religious upbringing, and so for me, my family's, let's say, blueprint around money was exaggerated by the religion's blueprint around money. So I got a lot of messages about money would make you bad, it would make you crooked, it would make you selfish and greedy. So there was a lot of negative things that I heard about money that got reinforced not only in the home but also in the church. Second is modeling. So this is what we observe. So these are the things that happened that we saw happen in front of us when we were children around money. Things that if you saw your mother hiding purchases or maybe saw someone hiding money. If you heard your parents and saw your parents saving for a rainy day, so kind of always that expectation that they were going to need to save for a rainy day. A lot of people's parents argued about money. It was a hot topic at the dinner table. Some people had parents that never splurged. My mother, for example, she was someone who always bought things on sale, couldn't buy anything that wasn't on sale, always had to justify everything she bought and use coupons. And I tell people that my mother had an actual filing cabinet, like a four-drawer filing cabinet for coupons and rebates, and they laugh. They think that's funny, but it's true. So I have this, just vivid memory of my mother clipping coupons and saving UPC labels for rebates, for a $2 or a $3 rebate. It was this, very intricate system that she had. So that stuck in my mind. So, of course, part of my blueprint is I want to buy everything on a sale. Like, I have to justify spending things because they were on sale or it was a good deal. That's something that's in my money blueprint. The third way we get programmed is through specific incidences. So what we experience, things that actually happened to us, things that we were involved with, different things, stories I've heard from people over the years are, I knew one girl whose father lost his job, came home, was very angry, and the next day he left the family. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean those two things were tied together, but as a young girl, in her mind, that's exactly what happened. Dad loses his job, there's no money, he leaves the family. So, of course, money is a very painful issue for her in her life. I heard one story of a child who lost his money. He had been entrusted with a certain amount of money for the first time. It was the first time his mother gave him some money to go to the store and buy some bread, and he lost the money. And then he was told that he was irresponsible and that he would never be allowed to have money again. Tell me if you don't think that guy has money issues in his life. He has a hard time holding on to money. Not a big surprise. Some people got caught stealing money as children. And, maybe even before they realized that that was the wrong thing to do, and they were severely reprimanded for it. So they have a lot of guilt around that. Some people found money, couldn't keep it. So there's so many different things that you can experience, when you're young around money. Everyone's got their own stories. So what I'd like you to do right now is maybe some of those examples kind of reminded you of some things that might have happened to you around money. I'd like you to write down a specific money memory. Okay, so write down on a piece of paper on the form that you have, write down a specific money memory. And I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to do that. You can always add more details later, but just get the basic, story or whatever it was happened. Just get that down. Okay, I'm not sure whether that was 30 seconds more or less because I actually don't have a watch, but I just wanted you to jot down the basics. You can always add detail in later. And what I'd like you to do is tonight or the next time you see your spouse or partner, and by the way, this can be a business partner. This doesn't have to be a personal relationship. Business partners will have different money blueprints, too, and therefore will be a source of conflict as well. So, but the next time you see this person, I want you to ask them what their most memorable money experience was from their childhood. And just give them a few, you know, kind of give them some examples, maybe, you know, share with them yours, but just ask them what their most memorable experience. Now, it's not always negative. Some people are really fortunate and have a great positive experience around money, which is wonderful. They probably have less issues with money in their life than the others do. But just ask them for their earliest or most memorable money memory. And then what you want to do is you want to share yours with them and ask them to share it. Theirs with you, and then talk about the impact that this has had on you. Because what we find is that when we hear what people's early childhood memories are around money, it has always impacted them and how they treat money as adults. I've done a lot of work on this where I've really dug into the way my parents viewed money, talked about money, handled money, and how it's impacted me and created my blueprint. So that's something that's a homework assignment I'm going to give you. Talk about the impact that it's had on you. Another way that our money blueprint kind of shows up, I think, from our childhood is in our DISC style. So we kind of know that our personality is formed at a very young age. And so each of the DISC behavioral traits or behavioral styles has an inherent money blueprint in it, which is really funny to think about. But when you look at the different styles, all D's will have some similarities in how they handle money and how they spend their money and what they choose their to spend their money on. Same with high I's, high S's, and high C's. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. So on the form, if you have it in front of you, number 3 is your DISC money type, and then there's a 4-cell diagram where it's got D in the upper right-hand corner, I in the bottom right-hand corner, S in the left-hand bottom corner, and C in the top left corner. And so basically, I'm just going to go through some of the characteristics of each and then tell you kind of what their money blueprint or their money type is, okay? So if you know your style, then you're obviously going to want to identify your type, but if you know the style of your partner or your spouse, you're going to want to identify their type as well. So let's start in the upper right-hand corner, and if you don't have this form, then just you know, you can just take notes on a piece of paper. That's fine. We're going to start with the D. So what are some things that we know about high D behavioral styles? Well, we know that these are the results-oriented people of the world. These are the people that like to produce results. They are high-risk takers. They're very daring. They're very adventurous. They're extroverts, but they're task-oriented. They feel like they are in control, no matter what environment they are in. They're very competitive, and they want to win, okay? So there's just some characteristics. So how do you think they relate to money? Well, they're going to relate to money in the exact same way that their behavioral style is. They're going to be daring. They're going to be adventurous with it. They're going to take risks. When it comes to investing, these are going to be the high risk takers. They're not going to want to play it safe. They would have to be encouraged to think long term because they're going to look at short terms and they're going to try and gain as much as they can. They want to win. They want to be competitive. They're probably going to have the latest gadgets. That's something that high D's would spend money on, you know, things that are kind of impressive, that would impress other people. They will spend their money on things for status. They will spend their money on nice cars, nice clothes, nice homes. Their furnishings in their office will be impressive. That's kind of the image that they like to portray. They're going to want to spend their money on innovative and new things. Old-fashioned, traditional things don't appeal to them. They want new, and they want to be on the cutting edge. That's their behavioral style. They would be typified. Their money type would be considered a spender, okay, if you were going to look at different money types. These would be spenders, okay? They're going to have to be encouraged to save. They're going to have to be encouraged to put away for retirement because they're going to want all their money accessible right then. That's going to give them that feeling of power and control. So they're spenders. Let's take a look at the high I. So high I's, they're all about interaction with people. They're the people-oriented people of the world. They love relationships. They love connecting with new people. High eyes are also high risk. I would say they're more high to moderate risk takers. They love to have fun. It's all about the experience. It's all about the present, the here and the now. They're not real good at thinking about the future and planning for the future, which would give you some indication as their money type. They're extroverts as well. They absolutely feel like they're in control. They want to look good to others. Okay, so they want people to think well of them. So these are the type of people. So all those things are going to apply when they relate to money. They're going to be very generous with their money. They're probably going to give too much of it away. They're going to want to treat their friends. They're going to be very generous tippers. These are the people that will, you know, tip 30 to 50% on a bill. They will spend money on the experience. So if something's a fun thing to do, it doesn't matter if they don't have the money, they'll find a way to pay for it. And they're going to buy things that are flashy and one of a kind. Like they want to be unique and they want to stand out. So those types of things will appeal to them. So they're more like a spender, avoider money type. They absolutely will spend money, but because they don't want to think about the future, they don't want to worry about the future because that's going to cramp their style, they're going to avoid probably the money, the details of the money. Okay, so high steadiness people. So these are the people that really want security and stability. Okay, they're low risk takers. They prefer the status quo. They don't like a lot of change. They're introverted. They don't feel like they're in control in situations, and they want peace and harmony. That's what they're striving for. So these are the type of people who are going to need a lot more time when it comes to making big purchases, because for them, making big purchases is risky, so they're going to need to, you know, take time to feel comfortable with it. They will tend to spend money on their families and family members and not so much on themselves, so they'll tend to deny themselves certain things in order to provide either for their spouse or their children. They will probably live very simply because they prefer to save their money. And when they do spend money, they're going to want traditional products. They're going to want things that are tried and true, you know, for that sense of security. So their money type is they're a saver with somewhat of an avoider. They are a little bit of an avoider as well, but they will tend to be more of a saver than a spender. Then the high compliant person. So this is the person that wants information and details. They are no risk. They don't want any kind of risk. They're looking for the right way or the proper way to do things. They're introverted. They don't feel like they're in control. And they want and need to be correct about things. Like they really want to be right. They see things more of a black and white kind of way. So what's going to appeal to them? Obviously, technical gadgets. These are people who are, you know, usually up on the newest technology. They're going to be the type of people that are going to have their calculator to help them figure out the tip for the waitress. They will probably have a very specific budget, and they'll use Excel or Quicken to track their expenses because, like I said, these are the people that are into the details. When they do spend their money, they're going to want proven products. They're going to want guarantees. They're going to want warranties. These are the people that may actually purchase that warranty, you know, extension or whatever it is that they try and sell you when you buy something. So high compliant people, their money type is savers as well. So you've got compliant and steadiness are the savers, dominant and influence are the spenders, and then steadiness and influence people have a little bit of the avoiding money type as well. Okay. So let's go on to number four. So now we know the money types, and hopefully you were able to identify yourself as well as a spouse or partner. And if they're different, you can see where the conflict could come in. And if they're the same, if you happen to be married or, you know, with somebody or partnering with somebody who's the same style, then you might see the challenge comes in that you're overboard on one side. So if it's, let's say, two high eyes, and you're both spenders, and you both love to spend for the experience, but neither one of you is saving for the future, you can see how that could be a potential problem. Well, here's the solution to that. Number four talks about the simplest, most effective money management system. And while I would love to take credit for this, unfortunately I cannot, because I learned it from someone else. And I learned it about 3 years ago. I remember it was October of 2005. Actually, it was a few months before that I actually read the book. The book is called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, and it's written by a man named T. Harv Eker. And in there, he shares the money management system. And then in October 2005, what I did is I went to his Millionaire Mind Intensive Seminar, and they teach you how to do the system at the seminar. And I've been using it, not perfectly, I'll be honest, but I've been using a form of this system ever since. And I'll share, after I give you this system and some of the details, I'll share with you how it's helped me arrange my finances and what are the, you know, the great things about it that I've seen. I will tell you this. I went to the seminar with my sister, so we learned it at the same time. My sister at the time was going through a divorce after 27 years of marriage. And, of course, their number one thing they ever thought about was money, for sure. And as we learned this system and as they taught it to us, I remember my sister turned to me in the seminar and said, "This system could have saved my marriage." And that, like, struck me because, of course, I'd watched my sister suffer for years over this topic of money, and now she was going through a divorce. So just knowing that a simple system could have that kind of impact, and, of course, seeing what it's done for me and my business the last 3 years, I'm really excited to share this with you right now. So basically what we have there in front of us, if you have the form, are six jars, okay? And I'm going to give you the label for each of the jars and then a percentage that is assigned to them. So the first jar is necessities, okay, so you can label it NEC or write necessities on the jar. The second jar is give. The third jar is, you can write FFA or financial freedom account. The fourth jar is LTSS, which stands for long-term savings for spending. And that second S is really important. I'll explain why. The fifth jar is education, or EDU. And the sixth jar is called play. So we have necessities, give, FFA, LTSS, education, and play. Okay, now necessities gets 50%. And whenever we're talking about this system, we're talking about after-tax income. Okay, so that's either the paycheck that you bring home after your taxes have been taken out of it, or if you own a business, that is after you've paid your taxes on your gross revenue. So this is net, what's left. So 50% is in the necessities jar, and then each of the other jars gets 10%. Of your after-tax income, okay? So, of course, the first reaction people have to that is, whoa, there is no way I could live on 50% of my income. And I admit that is the reaction I first had when I heard this 3 years ago, because it does seem very unrealistic. So let's call this the ideal, and let's call this something to work towards, okay? And maybe play with the percentages at first. Okay, when you first start with this system. So when I first started with this system, I don't think I could put 1% in these jars. But more important than the amount that you put in there is the fact that you do it and that you have the separate accounts or the separate jars and that you create the habit of doing it. Okay? So basically, what goes into necessities? This is all your household necessities, your mortgage, your utilities, your insurances, your phones, your cable, your groceries. Now, everyone's going to consider different things necessities, okay? So just let's say right off the top. There are women that consider pedicures a necessity. And if that's you, that's fine. That's no problem. We're not going to argue with that. But just know that there's certain things that you're going to want to have come out of your necessities jar or account. And then there's other places those things could also be paid for. So the give account, that is 10% of your after-tax income to give away, okay? This could be to charities, it could be to your church, it could be to the community, it could be to family members, it can be in forms of gifts, donations, anything like that. It's just yours to give away. Financial freedom account is 10% to put in anything that you're going to, that's going to help you, let's say, create passive income. Okay, so this is with the This is with keeping retirement in mind. How are you going to support yourself when you're no longer working? Okay? This is money that you're never going to spend. You're never going to touch this FFA jar or account. It's solely to create passive income. Your LTSS, long-term savings for spending, this is money to spend on anything you want. You save it up in order to spend it, and there's no time limit. You could save for 2 years if you wanted to put a down payment on a house. You could save for a vacation. You could save for a big splurge, you know, a big screen TV, something like that. So this is money that you build up, and then you spend it. Your education, this is money that you're going to take, and you're going to use it to invest back into yourself. Okay, because the concept is that for you to always increase your value to the marketplace, to your employer, et cetera, you've got to continue to develop yourself. So this is for anything like long-term education. It could be courses, seminars, going back to school, books, anything that will, you know, help you grow and develop. And then the last account, probably my favorite account because, of course, I'm a high I, is the play account. And this is an account that needs to be blown out once a month. Like you save up money or you put that 10% in, and then once a month you think of something really fun to do with that money. This is money you want to use to splurge. You want to indulge yourself. You want to do something that you don't ever do. Okay? So if you get massages on a regular basis, that's not what your play account is for. Okay? Because those massages, that should come out of your necessities. But if you've never gone and gotten like a full spa package or like a full day away at a spa, that might come out of your play account. And the point of that is that you're going to be so responsible about managing your money that you want to reward yourself. And I can just say that since I started this money management system, in the past I used to spend my money, a lot of little money on little things all the time, you know, a book here, a lotion here, a candle there, like just constant little purchases. Then when I started using this system, I started putting more in my play account and kind of saving it up for that, you know, that big purchase. And I found what happened was it stopped all my little spending. It stopped my need or whatever that desire was to just spend this little money all over the place because I was looking forward to saving it for this bigger purchase or this, you know, something that I could really enjoy. Another thing is I have a separate give account. Like I have different accounts at my bank. I actually have five or six different accounts at my bank. They probably think I'm crazy, but let me tell you how wonderful it is to have a separate account for your give money. I have an account, and so I have a debit card as well as a you know, checkbook to that account. So I always have the debit card with me. So anytime I'm out, and I know what, you know, roughly what is in that account at all times, whenever I see something that I want to buy for someone, you know, just I see the perfect gift for my sister. And it's nowhere near a holiday, it's not her birthday, anything like that, but I just want to get it for her. I don't even hesitate, because I never have to worry, well, can I really afford it, or really, you know, should I really spend that? I know it's in my account, and I just get it for her. Anytime I, you know, get a solicitation for a donation in the mail, if it's a cause that resonates with me, I have no problem. I just pull out the checkbook to my, you know, give account, I write a check, it's done. It's like, you know, you never have to think about, well, should I really, can I afford this, et cetera, because it's already separated from your income, and it's just sitting there waiting to be given away, which is a wonderful feeling. Again, I'm not perfect at this, you know, this system. I wish I was, but I definitely am making progress. But all I can tell you is in the 3 years that I've been using it to the extent that I have, my finances have shifted dramatically. My debt repayment has been, you know, the debt that's been paid down has been significant. The income I'm making is much greater. And I have no doubt that it's by paying attention to this and using a system that really works well for everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're a spender or a saver. This system will work for you because if you are a saver, it makes you spend on yourself. You have to play with that money. If you're a spender, it makes you save. It forces you to save some money. So by implementing this system, like I said, it's really easy to follow. And I think everyone would see progress no matter what type you are. I do have more information on how a couple would go about using this system. I'm not going to go through the whole detail. If you want more information on it, just contact me, and I'll actually give you a worksheet that will show you exactly how a couple would break down their income into this system. And if we have time left at the end of the call, I'll give you more information on that. But basically, how it works is no matter who makes, you know, the money in the relationship, whether if there's one provider, whether two people bring home a paycheck but one person makes more than the other, the money is pooled together, and the discretionary income that each person gets to spend is equal. Okay, so just because someone makes more money or all the money doesn't mean that the other person gets less. And then what you each have your own accounts. You each have your own give, your own FFA, your own LTSS, your own education, and your own play accounts. And here's the most important part, and I think this is what my sister really responded to, was that it is not your job to police what your partner does with their money. Okay? So whatever they decide to splurge on and spend their money on, that is up to them. Whoever they decide to give their money to, that is up to them. Now, as a couple, you will still have your joint accounts, and you'll still have your joint give, FFA, LTSS, education, and play accounts for you to make decisions together about what you'd like to do with those that money. But you'll have your separate monies to decide what to do with. So I think it's a great system. Like I said, if you want more information, you can either contact me, or you could also get the book Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker, because it explains more in there. So we're a little bit past the half waypoint, and I wanted to introduce Craig Houck to the call. Let me just make sure he's there.
I am here.
Oh, excellent. Wow. So
yes.
You've been there listening, huh?
I have.
So how did I do with the money management system?
Excellent. Okay. I was able to follow right through and was able to, you and I have talked about this maybe 3 years ago, so mm-hmm. I've seen you grow using the system, and it's had a tremendous impact on me watching you, so great job with it.
Well, great. Thanks. Well, I didn't give too much background on you at the beginning of the call, so let me formally introduce you. Craig Houck is an AXA financial advisor. And Craig, I know a little bit about your background, you know, basically what you shared with me about, you know, your parents divorcing when you were young and what kind of impact that had on you and, you know, how you apply that to your, you know, financial occupation or why you're in doing what you do. Do you want to share a little bit about that before we get into what we were going to talk about?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I would say it definitely had a profound impact on my life with my parents going through a divorce. So my choice of career is certainly impacted by that family situation. So it's right on target. So
yeah. And I think, you know, probably more than we realize, and like I started this call with, talking about things that happened in our past and our childhoods and how it impacts us as adults, and yet we don't really think about that. So when you explained to me that, you know, your parents had divorced and obviously money was an issue back then, that it kind of guided your choice of a career, I was like, well, yeah, no surprise. I'm a behavioral analyst because I had so much relationship turmoil around me when I was a kid, and the way I used to escape it was I'd go into my room and I'd play with my Barbie dolls, and I'd have my Barbie dolls having a relationship and having a conversation and solving conflict. Mm-hmm. And so when people hear that story, well, of course I became a behavioral analyst.
So you were analyzing me.
Always, always. I can't turn it off. So when you first heard the money management system, because obviously as a financial advisor and someone who advises, I would say probably, you know, more couples than I would think single people in your practice. Does it kind of line up with what I would consider the official, you know, way to do finances? Is there anything in that system that you think people should be aware of or cautious of? Anything that you think doesn't work? Or is it a pretty solid system, even though it sounds so simple?
I think it's very solid. I would say initially don't get hung up on the exact percentages. I think it's more important to have a system and then use those as guidelines to work towards. So, but absolutely, and investing in yourself is important. Giving, so there are a lot of principles around giving back 10%, and then certainly living on as little as possible, living on that 50% is a great target. some people might have challenges initially, and again, it would just be a target to work for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when I started that, I literally remember a couple months. This will tell you how far I've come in 3 years. I remember the first few months doing this, putting $10 in each account. That tells you how much I was bringing in. And I, you know, and maybe it wasn't that, but maybe I really needed to live on 90% of what I was bringing in. But I remember thinking, well, if I could just put $10 in the account, that's a place to start, and I can always build from there. And you think about it, and you go, well, what on earth could you, how could you play with $10? You know, like, how could you give away $10? You'd be amazed at what you can do with $10 when you put your mind to it. I remember one of the first things I bought was a really fun, funky watch. There's a, if you're not from Rochester, there's a really cute Parkley Pharmacy on Park Avenue. They've got some real fun, funky things. And I was in there, and I kind of had in my mind that I had $10 to blow, and I found, like, this great watch. Of course, it only worked for, you know, 6 months, but I got a lot of, I got a lot of pleasure out of that $10 watch. So I agree. I think people should just start wherever they're at. And in my opinion, any system is better than no system.
Definitely.
And any system with a small percentage is probably going to build the habit, and you'll be able to put more and more in. So since you work with a lot of couples, in your experience, what would you say the biggest difficulty is when it comes for couples, when it comes to planning? Is it that people aren't on the same – well, let me just ask you that. What do you think the most difficult thing is for couples when it comes to start planning their money, planning retirement, that type of thing? What do you see?
I think it's just the initial communication. So very few people talk about money. So even just starting the process of communicating with a spouse or significant other, that's 90% of the battle, is just starting that discussion and then understanding where the other person is coming from. And then you'll get a better understanding of some of their motivations around money and why they have certain beliefs and why they act in a certain way. So just starting the process would be a huge help, and then going from there.
And do you find that that kind of stuff comes out when you're talking to a couple? Like, do they really get that deep?
Yes, and oftentimes we find that it's maybe the first time they've ever talked about it. So they may have been married for 30 years, 25 years, been together, and this is the first time they've really had a chance to talk about money. So I would say it's, if you haven't discussed it, it's a great time to start. And also, don't worry, because the vast majority of people don't.
So you probably end up being like a marriage counselor.
Yeah, absolutely. Psychologist, counselor, financial guru.
Wow.
Definitely.
Well, and what I can see happening, too, is, you know, like we had talked about earlier, people's money blueprints not lining up.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine people who don't talk about their goals or their future sitting down for the first time talking to you. And one guy, you know, his dream for retirement is to, you know, sell everything and sail around the world, and she gets seasick. And this is something
not
they've
a good
never, yeah, something they've never talked about. I can imagine that happens too.
Definitely.
So what's the last couple months been like for you as a financial advisor?
Good question.
What's this upheaval done for, you know, your clients and their relationships? Have you seen any trends or anything you want to share?
Well, I think it's normal to feel stress during these times. So if you are nervous, you're feeling stressed, that's everybody is. So you're not unique. So it's more important how we react to the stress. Don't panic. Don't make rash decisions. Don't pull all your money and put it in the mattress. We'll get through this. We've been through this before. It's going to take some time. The last few months have certainly been interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. And I think, you know, money is a difficult topic for a lot of people to discuss just when things are good. But I think when things get tough and there's a lot of stress involved, it makes things worse. Everything gets heightened. And so you might go to have what could be a simple conversation, but because now there's fear and anxiety on top of it, people have even a harder time discussing some of these issues. So if you were to give people your best advice right now, would that be it? Don't panic. Don't do anything rash. Don't make any crazy decisions.
I would say don't panic, but also don't put your head in the sand and ignore it. So certainly now is a good time to look at your situation, make some adjustments. If there are some things that need to be done. Now is a great time. So it's happening. It's going to happen, and we will get through it. But make some changes. Use this as a great opportunity to start those lines of discussion with either your spouse or significant other or an advisor you're working with, and move forward. Mm-hmm. So we will get through it.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I really appreciate about you, and by the way, Craig works, he has a partner at AXA, his name's Phil, and one thing that you and I have talked about is that, you know, when things get scary for people, a lot of times they can't find their financial advisor. Their financial advisors kind of go AWOL. And one thing I really love about your and Phil's philosophy is that even if we don't have good news, we will be in touch with our clients. We will stay in touch. We will be accessible. And I think that's really important because I think that's very comforting to people. Like I said, even when you don't have good news to share or even when you can't, you know, paint a silver lining to what they're going through, you and Phil do a really great job of keeping in touch with people.
Yes, Nancy knows about an event we have coming up in December. We're going to host, we expect, probably about 250 people, but it's our annual holiday appreciation brunch. And even during these times, we're still going to hold that and still show that we care about our clients and we're working through the situation with them, and we will get out on the other side together.
Well, and I think that's a great message that you're sending, not just to your clients, but also to business people in general. Because, you know, a lot of people use this, you know, type of economic situation to really, they retreat in their business. You know, we see people hold back marketing, you know, ideas and plans. We see people scale back on their spending. And from what I understand, you and Phil, you're having more people to this brunch than you did even last year. So I know for out of your own pocketbooks, you're spending actually more money.
Yes.
To show your clients that you appreciate them and that you're there for them. And I think that's great because I think it sends a message that, you know, we're not going to cower and run away, and neither should you. You know, we're all going to kind of face this together.
Yes. It's easy to hide under your desk and not return phone calls and not return emails and not meet with people. But, for instance, this week I think I will have about 25 client meetings this week. So it's important to sit down and just address the fears and answer questions and give guidance during good times and in bad.
So the last thing I want to ask, because, and I'm assuming this is the case for other people because I know it was the case for me, is that a lot of people have never met with a financial advisor for the simple reason that they're a little bit intimidated because they think they've got to have all their ducks in a row or they think that they need to have a better handle on their situation than they do. And maybe there's some type of embarrassment that goes along with it. Like, I really don't want someone to dig into that,
sure,
you know, part of my life. Is there anything you can tell people, like, about a preliminary meeting or what do they need to be prepared to go meet with a financial planner or advisor for the first time? How painful or painless is it?
I think it can be very painless. But I think the important part is to just start the process, find somebody you're comfortable with. So listen to friends and family and coworkers who have had positive experiences. And this is a great, kind of a great litmus test to see how the advisor is going to do. So not that they're making money during this market, but are they returning your phone calls? Are they scheduling meetings with you? Are they being proactive? So I think just starting the process, finding someone you trust, and you'll be grateful you did it.
Okay. Is there something they should do before they come meet with you? Is there anything they should, before even a meeting, should they know what they want? Should they have their goals outlined? Should they have a budget? Do they need any of that, or can they just come in and start the process?
I think just start the process.
Okay.
And typically we would help them start to answer some of those questions. So initially just a general conversation, understanding what the goals and objectives are. So even maybe having some high-level thoughts around what your long-term and short-term goals are, and then meeting with somebody who can help walk you through what your choices are and what options you have and helping you align your goals with your finances.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, since I have you on this call, before I open up the lines, Can you give people your contact information just in case they want to reach you
sure.
with any questions?
Best thing to do is probably through either my website, which is Craig, C-R-A-I-G, Houck, H-O-U-C-K, .com. And my phone number is 585-475-8464.
Okay.
That's probably
it. And you said that you, from this call, if anybody contacted you, you'd be willing to have a consultation with them at no charge?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. So we will make sure that when we send out the recording to the call that we also send Craig's contact information too. And then I had mentioned a couple resources through the call that I just want to give you now. And if you want to look up on Amazon.com for the book Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, again, the author is T. Harv Eker. And also in there, he talks about his Millionaire Mind Intensive course, which is a 3-day weekend, which kind of explains the concepts and principles in the book, but you kind of experience it. And if you want more information on that, you can go to peakpotentials.com. Again, that's peakpotentials.com. And you just, under there, under the events, you look at Millionaire Mind Intensive. And they have those all over the country and in Canada. So, you know, most people could get to one within a few hours of where they are. So, okay. So I think that wraps up that part of the call. Everyone have a great day. And if you have any questions, feel free to call me or email me.